Back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, June 10th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. I open the show with remarks from State Attorney General William Tong and Governor Ned Lamont regarding the deployment of National Guard and Marine troops to Los Angeles. Landmark Legal Foundation VP of Legal Affairs Mike O'Neill dropped by to talk about the likely challenges to the Trump deployment of military personnel to Los Angeles. Connecticut Conference of Municipalities Executive Director and CEO Joe DeLong dropped by to talk about this year's General Assembly session and a controversial housing bill the Governor Ned Lamont is now threatening to veto. And a Yankee Institute blogger and columnist Megan Portfolio dropped by with her weekly update. She talked about ongoing issues for Connecticut electric customers and last week's conclusion of the General Assembly session.
Hey, it's a Tuesday. Why don't we start out with a game? How about we start out with a little game? The name of the game is Pick the Sane Democrat. Pick the Democrat who's actually sane. Can we do that? I'm going to give you, this is going to be audience participation here. I'm going to read some stuff to you. I'm going to play you some audio. And you tell me which member of the Democratic Party, I'm going to give three of them here. You tell me which one is expressing any sanity that the rest of the country is feeling when they watch what's going on in L.A. And we'll get to the audio today from Governor Lamont and William Tong, who's, you know, whose gubernatorial campaign is in full swing, whether Ned Lamont runs again or not. I mean, some of the stuff this guy says, oh, my God, oh. But I love how this whole L.A. thing is being framed. Well, Trump wants martial law. He wants true fascism. Yeah. Well, and again, I ask you something. I ask you something. That nobody, well, I shouldn't say no one. There are some sane members of the great party of JFK and FDR out there and Harry Truman. But why aren't we hearing more voices from mainly Democrats in this country telling protesters to cool it, to stop it? Because the only reason the Marines are going to get there and the only reason the National Guard is there is because of idiots and morons burning cars and waving Mexican flags. But what they're trying to do is make this a free speech issue and a bending of the knee to totalitarianism, which it's not. It is so painfully apparent what's happening here. The inability of a lot of people in the Democratic Party, in this state, in this country, to tell the protesters, hey, cool it.
Well, you know, the military is going to be the cause if it gets out of hand.
No, I've never bought that before, and I'm not going to buy it now. Well, it's the military's fault. No, it's not. Let me ask you something. If ICE agents weren't being attacked and threatened there, do you think the military would be in L.A. right now? Simple question. Yes or no? You don't have a lot of time to think about this. Make believe it's Jeopardy. Hi, Paul. What is no? No is correct. If ICE was allowed to do its job and get rid of a lot of bad immigrants who already have deportation orders, do you think the National Guard would be there right now? Do you think? Do you think there'd be a deployment coming up now, apparently, of a few hundred Marines in L.A.? Do you think that would be happening if there were no riots? Well, Paul, people have the right to protest, yes. To protest, fine. To burn crap and to drive around burning hulks with Mexican flags and to push back on local police, no. You don't have a right to do that. You don't. But we don't hear about that from some of our local leaders. We'll feature this audio throughout the day. Here's our Attorney General William Tong from a few minutes ago, who for some reason, I guess, feels this is a great time to, you know, start his gubernatorial campaign.
Some people have said here in Connecticut that the protests are un-American. There is nothing more American than the First Amendment.
Wait a minute. Wait. Hold it. Who in Connecticut is saying people shouldn't protest? Who's saying that? This is what politicians do. You know, some people say, well, sir, you're in a position of authority in this state. Who is some people? Because anybody with a sane brain knows it's okay to protest in this country. You see what William Tong does here, with all due respect? He never, and I listened to him speak for about 35 minutes or so before the show. Never once did I hear him allude in any great length to the violence and the attacks on ICE agents. He won't do that. But he'll say stuff like this.
Some people have said here in Connecticut that the protests are un-American. There is nothing more American than the First Amendment.
Okay. Yeah.
There is nothing more important than religion, speech, press, assembly, petition.
All right.
The five pillars of the First Amendment.
Okay.
Huh? The people of this state should feel safe, right, in exercising those rights, and know that we will protect the people of this state in the exercise of those rights lawfully and peacefully.
Oh, yeah. What? So we expect now the Marines and the National Guard to come bombarding Connecticut here, which I don't think is going to happen. Now, if ICE agents start getting physically attacked and we have violent protests in the streets, I don't know. Bring in the National Guard. Mobilize the Guard from Granby there. See, the thing is, I think Ned Lamont would do that because he's not nuts like a lot of the people he works with. Ned Lamont actually a few minutes ago actually alluding to the times when the Democratic Party wasn't run by crazies.
The right to protest is a hallmark of American liberties. And yet you look on TV right now and you see the demonstrations in Los Angeles, now Austin and Dallas and Seattle, and the demonstrations are ramping up, and some of them are getting more violent.
Oh, look at that. A Democrat who recognizes the violence. It's amazing. There are some sane Democrats out there, not Democrats that are trying to run for governor, but I digress.
The right to protest is a hallmark of American liberties. And yet you look on TV right now and you see the demonstrations and Los Angeles, now Austin and Dallas and Seattle, and the demonstrations are ramping up, and some of them are getting more violent.
Mm-hmm.
You have the right to protest. You have the right to protest peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
If you protest peacefully, you enhance the cause, and people listen to your message. If the protest turns violent, sometimes that distracts from your message. It's the wrong thing to do.
And that's why the left wing of the Democratic Party is trying to force Ned Lamont not to run again, because he's not crazy, as a lot of people surrounding him are. Oh, my God. Before we go to the break here, let me give you a quote from a guy who had a stroke and is still smarter than nine-tenths of the guy in his party, Democratic Senator John Fetterman, Pennsylvania. Quote from Fetterman: "I unapologetically stand for free speech, peaceful demonstrations, and immigration, but this is not that." This, Senator Fetterman goes on to say, quote, "is anarchy and true chaos. My party," meaning the Democratic Party, "my party loses the moral high ground when we refuse to condemn setting cars on fire, destroying buildings, and assaulting law enforcement." 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So what do you think? And the answer to my question is, I gave you three chances to pick a sane Democrat. It looked like Mr. Fetterman and Mr. Lamont were the two there. But let me ask you, maybe you think I'm wrong. Maybe you think I'm the insane one. I don't think so. I haven't been on medication for years, but that's another story. But here you have John Fetterman saying, knock it off. There you have Governor Ned Lamont saying, knock it off. And then we have William Tong acting like Connecticut's going to be invaded. Oh, my God. Oh. Do you think the National Guard or the Marines would be in Los Angeles now if there was no violence? If they let the ICE agents do their jobs, do you think the Marines would be there? Do you? Do you think the National Guard would be there? What part of this does a good chunk of the Democratic Party not understand? All right, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Question of the day. We started off here on the radio at 333-9422, talk or text. Or if you want to chime in on our Facebook page, facebook.com/voiceofct. Do you think this military deployment to Los Angeles is going to make things worse or better there? Now, to me, I think it's simple. It'll be fine if people would just stop, burning things. Do you see what they were doing, by the way? I guess Los Angeles has these robotic taxis. I think it's Waymo. Did you see that? It's actually pretty cool technology. And you can hail from any part in L.A. a remote car. A robot car will come to your location. So you know what some of these sickos are doing? They're calling the cars, and then they're beating them and destroying them and setting them on fire. But everything's fine. Oh, it's just peaceful protest. The police can handle it. No, the L.A. police can't. Los Angeles has a metro population of 8 million. You know how many cops they have? I was shocked. How many police do you think the city of Los Angeles has? And Linda, hang on. We'll be right with you. Think about it. They have 8,000 cops. New York City has 35,000. Notice how very little of the city you see ever happens in New York, because they have 35,000 cops with billy clubs, and a lot of them are on horseback. So it doesn't last too long. Remember the Columbia stuff from last year? No. They went up the ladder, took people in that building at Columbia, and tossed them out. And thankfully, we have a Democratic governor who's not crazy.
The right to protest is a hallmark of American liberties. And yet you look on TV right now and you see the demonstrations in Los Angeles, now Austin and Dallas and Seattle, and the demonstrations are ramping up, and some of them are getting more violent. Yeah. You have the right to protest. You have the right to protest peacefully. If you protest peacefully, you enhance the cause and people listen to your message. If the protest turns violent, sometimes that distracts from your message. It's the wrong thing to do.
And that's when you get the military called in there. Linda in Trumbull is with us this afternoon. Hi, Linda. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for taking my call, Paul.
Yeah.
I tuned in maybe 15, 20 minutes ago, so you may have covered what my question is already.
Go ahead. No problem.
Apologies for that. I absolutely agree with you in terms of the violence. And, you know, there's peaceful protest and there's violence and there's a line.
Yeah.
So. But that's not. I actually got in my car and I thought I'm going to see what Paul's talking about, because here's my question.
Okay.
of the day.
Sure,
it's related, and sorry for the left hand turn.
No, it's okay.
I watched a video,
yeah,
about 3 or 4 hours ago. Someone,
yeah,
sent me CNN crew, and I watched the video. CNN crew escorted away.
I saw that
from the protest.
I saw that,
and I haven't been the same for the last 3 hours. I'm like, wait, as a former journalist myself from years ago,
okay,
schooled in journalism and,
yeah,
an active reporter for
me
15
too.
Years back in the day.
Me too, before I got into talk. Yes, yeah.
I literally thought, I'm going to get my car and do an errand so I can talk to Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care I just need to bounce this. So what are your thoughts?
You know, I saw that and I said, well, wait a minute. We didn't see the whole exchange here. Now, I saw the beginning of it. It doesn't seem, Linda, like there's anything crazy going on. Now, what I was interested in is, I think the policeman there or the guard person said, we just need you to put your hands behind your back. Now, ostensibly, even after the guy introduced his crew and he said, this is my crew, you saw that in the clip,
right,
waving him over. You know, Linda, I've never been in that situation. Now, here's my immediate question. How many times did he tell him to leave? And I know there's protocol, and you being a former reporter, I can talk to on this. You know, Linda, whether it's a police stakeout or whether it's a fire or whether it's an accident scene, right? Some cops, state police versus local police, they'll say, hey, listen, get over there or get out of here. We really want you to move here for your safety. So that was my thought. Now, I did see it and say, that's interesting in the fact that he's telling him to move. Now, I don't know what the protocol is. A lot of times in these scenes, you see somebody will be wearing a helmet, right? And it'll say press on it. It'll say media on it. So, you know, without knowing what was said beforehand, or is there a CO on the scene saying, hey, I don't want any reporters in here? I mean, I don't know. I immediately said to myself, geez, how would I have reacted with that? You know?
I'm glad to hear your thoughts. I just think we should keep our radar sharp on this.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I just haven't been the right. I have saw it, and it just sent chills up my spine of, you know, hold on. And if it happens to another video in a week and another video in a month, then there's something going on, because people go to war. I mean, we see the various news crews over in, you know, they're in bomb shelters because they don't want to get. So here we are in L.A.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say. I'll let you get back
well,
to your,
thanks.
You know, your line of thinking. But I just wanted to put it out there. We just have to have our radar sharp.
Absolutely. Linda, thank you. And I did see also a couple of videos yesterday where there were reporters literally in the line of fire. In fact, I think a BBC reporter got shot in the leg. Did you, any of you folks see that? With a rubber bullet? And I'm saying, and I see her doing her stand-up going, dear, that's a bad position. And I know as a reporter, listen, I've gotten shoved out of the way a few times back in my street reporting days. I've had cops tell me to get the F out of here. You know what I mean? There was also a local reporter for one of the network affiliates out there basically doing a stand-up in the middle of looters. Like, literally. They were literally like, excuse me, I just looted this. I need to get out of here. We go to one of my go-to guys to splain stuff that I don't get. Landmark Legal Foundation, VP of Legal Affairs, Mike O'Neill joins us. Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Good afternoon, Paul.
Okay, so explain to me what you think is, or maybe what you know, if you've read it or not, the legal challenge that's pushing back against President Trump for ordering this military intervention. What's California contending here?
California is going to contend that President Trump doesn't have the authority to do what he's doing. Of course, obviously, what they're going to do. This is a continuation. We've seen this pattern before. Mm-hmm. Virtually, as we could say, Paul, almost every single executive action it seems the president's taken is being challenged in some way, shape, or form in some court somewhere. I think the first thing you need to talk about and is of interest in this particular case is the venue that was chosen by the governor of California, Gavin Newsom.
Okay.
Interestingly, he did not initiate the lawsuit. He did not file the lawsuit seeking the restraining order and the injunction in the locality where this is occurring. If you're going to file a lawsuit in a federal court, you'd presume that you'd file it in Los Angeles. Of course, this is where the action is occurring.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, or maybe file it in Sacramento because it's the capital of the state of California.
Sure.
Nope. The lawsuit was filed in San Francisco. Now, why would the governor file a lawsuit in the federal district court in San Francisco? Well, because he's more likely to have a judge who's going to be predisposed to or amenable to the particular arguments that they're positing. And, of course, they're going to say, the governor is going to making the argument that he needs to request this action, that the president is violating principles of federalism, violating state sovereignty. Interestingly, that Congress hasn't delegated the authority to the president to act in this. Interestingly, you could argue that he's making a non-delegation argument, which is a traditional argument that conservatives make that says that Congress hasn't delegated authority to executive agencies to execute, to do what they're doing. So he's making those arguments. He's saying that the governor needs to have a role in this. And unfortunately, he's wrong. Well, unfortunately, fortunately for people who value law and order, the governor is wrong. Donald Trump is acting well within his authority under Title 9 of the United States Code or Title 10 of the United States Code to utilize National Guard and military forces to ensure that there is peace and security, and to provide security apparatus, security structure, so that federal law enforcement officials can execute their duties, and to ensure that federal property, i.e. federal buildings, aren't burned, aren't destroyed.
I had a legal expert on yesterday, Thane Rosenbaum from CBS, and we talked about this, and he thought that the California action here, anticipating it as we have, Mike, was erroneous for the simple fact that what is any president to do? And this is what we were discussing, and I love your opinion on this. What is a president to do if he sits back and sees and doesn't think that a governor or a mayor is really doing their best to quell violence? Does he, as the commander-in-chief, have the ability? Would a court say, well, yeah, that's kind of his purvey as the president, or not?
Absolutely. And he, keep in mind also the context here. Yes, that is certainly the answer. But even more important and even more enhanced in this particular case is the federal law enforcement agencies are performing a federal function here. What was the action? It wasn't actually enforcement of immigration laws. It was the ICE agents were isolated an area that was being used allegedly for laundering money for drug cartels. So they were executing, remember, the purview, and this is, the California doesn't have a role in immigration enforcement. That's why this it's bunk when you say sanctuary cities. That's just simply bunk. Is federal law, the federal, under our constitutional structure, and you know as well as I do, I'm a big proponent of separation of powers and recognizing the authority of the states, but there is an exclusive role that the federal government plays in enforcing our nation's immigration laws. And when you have immigration officials enforcing laws and also addressing international money laundering by drug cartels located in Mexico, that's strictly the province of the federal law enforcement officials. And when you have efforts to impede those execution and enforcement of federal law, where there is no state role to play, then clearly the federal government has the authority, i.e. the president has the authority, to utilize National Guard troops to ensure that his federal law enforcement agencies are able to execute and enforce the law, the federal law. So I think you're absolutely right, but it is important to note that these are immigration and international criminal operations that we're talking about here.
So what is, finally, Mike, what is the argument likely to be from, say, the Solicitor General or the Attorney General, Rob Bonta, from California? He may have heard that. How would he counter you, in fact, in court? What's he going to say?
That there isn't the necessary. I think they would question the need for it, and that it's overkill, and that it's the province of the states to ensure security, generally speaking, and that this is a manufactured crisis, and that it minimize the extent to which the violence and the insurrection. And again, we haven't even gotten into the Insurrection Act. That's a different ball of wax. That hasn't been invoked by the president. But I would contend to you that the factual predicate is present there for contending that this is an insurrection. You have organized activities attempting to impede the enforcement of law and order. You have destruction of property. You have, I don't know if you saw the images of the Apple store being broken into. There are other stores in downtown Los Angeles. This merely isn't just a peaceful protest. And let's call that what it is. I mean, individuals who are talking this as mostly peaceful protest, that's akin to saying Joe Biden is sharp as a tack. Our eyes don't deceive us. When the American people see what's occurring, we know what's occurring. And that's, these are not mostly peaceful protests. This is an insurrection activity.
All right, Mike, listen, caffeine up, my friend, okay?
Thanks a lot, Bob.
All right, Mike, be good, buddy. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation. Joining us right now, a return visit from our friend Joe DeLong, who's the executive director of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, CCM. Been talking to those folks for years to get his thoughts on what just transpired or did not transpire in Hartford last week. Joe, it's Paul here. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, Paul. Thanks for having me.
No problem, Joe. So, Joe, give us your broad interpretation. I know we had you on a couple of times before the end of the session here, but give us your broad thoughts on what you saw, what you liked, what you didn't like. What do you think?
Well, one of the things I liked, and let's at least start with something I liked. I liked the fact that there was a real commitment to early child care and daycare in this session. And primarily, I mean, aside from stating the obvious, there are a lot of struggling families out there that child not being able to afford child care keeps them from being able to work and from being able to provide for their family and that sort of thing. So I think that's an investment that actually can make generational shifts if used the right way and can actually change people's lives and their trajectories. So I'm appreciative of the governor and the General Assembly for that being a priority. I think it was an important priority and a nice step in the right direction. Now, you know, where I come from, I mean, look, you're representing mayors and First Selectmen, but we still believe one of the greatest challenges that Connecticut faces is unsustainable, incredibly regressive property tax system. And this budget does absolutely nothing to change that. It only continues to increase that pressure and that stress. And you know, they're talking about the good. For the bad, that bad outweighs a whole lot of the good, because that just generationally continues to drive inequities and continues to make the state unaffordable for many, if not most.
Yeah.
Because we don't address that issue properly.
And people, Joe, that get trapped in their homes because, you know, they have maybe a buyer for their home or whatever, and then they say, well, what are the taxes here, right? And we've seen that all over. Oh, I can't pay 9, 10, 11 grand every year. Sorry, sale off, right?
One of the things that I think is sad but funny in some ways, in a sad, funny way,
yeah,
is we have all these lawmakers who will talk about affordable housing, affordable housing, affordable housing, and they'll try to pass all these crazy things to address affordable housing. Well, you're never going to have affordable housing with unaffordable property.
Yes, yes.
And the same lawmakers that will promote this affordable housing concept will then go and vote for, you know, a multitude of bills that will make property taxes increase. I just have never quite figured out where that disconnect comes from.
Yeah, and Joe, before we let you go here, let's talk about the elephant in the room here. Now, you may have heard the latest from the governor today. He said, hey, I still want to do some sort of housing bill, but he wants changes. He says he's more likely to veto it first and then ask for changes versus signing it and then making changes. So what are your thoughts on all this, this bill, from what you've been able to glean from it? I guess the governor isn't too happy on the final reading of this, Joe, because he thinks he wants more carrots and less sticks in the bill here. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, first off, our membership voted today to send a letter to the governor asking for a veto. Mm-hmm. That's no surprise. But here's what I'll say about that. And you know, I don't want to be overly critical. I have to work with the governor.
No, sure.
The governor's a nice, affable guy, mm-hmm, in many ways. The governor signed off on the bill. I mean, you know, when legislative leaders met with the governor's office on this legislation, it hit the floor with an agreement that everything in it was okay. Now, we knew it wasn't okay. There's a whole lot of people who knew it wasn't okay. So I appreciate the fact that the governor is stepping in and saying, hey, you know what? This really isn't okay, and it needs some modifications, and it needs to be fixed. I just wish he would have been a little sooner to the party. Because if he had been, we wouldn't be where we are right now.
Interesting. So you think, Joe, if there wasn't the blowback on this that really took off with, you know, shows here and people all over the state saying you got to read it and interest groups like yourself, do you think if there wasn't that blowback, the governor would have been fine with it or not?
Well, I can't get into his head.
Yeah.
I guess the question would be, you know, would he have read it thoroughly or analyzed it thoroughly without that blowback? Because I certainly feel like he has realized and honestly and sincerely realized that there are challenges with this legislation. But I think that had they done their due diligence on the front end, those challenges could have been addressed when they should have been addressed during the session, as opposed to giving sign off to something and not fully understanding how it worked.
All right, good stuff there. Hey, thanks, Joe DeLong, Connecticut Conference of Municipalities Executive Director. Joe, good to chat with you. You have my number anytime. You're welcome. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Have
appreciate a great day. It. Joe DeLong, she survived the craziness of the last few days of the legislative session in Hartford. She had been there for about a week or so watching CTN constantly on multiple screens, riffling through these multi-hundred page bills to find the rats, telling you and I what we need to know, even though her dog was giving her puppy eyes, but the dog got an extra bone and everything was fine. Megan Portfolio here, Yankee Institute for Public Policy. How are you holding up, Megan? Are you all recovered from last week?
Well, I'll be honest. I did take the Thursday and Friday off last week because I needed a little break. I just wanted to not look at anything that started with HB or SB.
Speaking of those bills, looks like our dear friend, His Excellency Governor Lamont, looks like, whoa, there's some changes a coming, aren't they, on this housing bill? How about that?
Yeah, the governor has got two big bills on his desk that were priority bills for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. One was the paying the striking workers, and the other one is this the big bad housing bill, omnibus bill. And I mean, he's getting a lot of pushback, bipartisan pushback from selectmen, mayors, advocates, Bridgeport. You know, not a lot of people are happy with this bill other than, you know, some of the, you know, big developers out there.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I got to tell you, when you have, I mean, think about this just as a microcosm for where I am in Fairfield County, Megan. When you have some city leaders and city council people in Bridgeport, you know, agreeing with mayors and first selectmen in, you know, in Wilton and Westport and in other places, that tells you it's bad, doesn't it? Or what am I missing?
No, it tells you it's bad, but it also it should tell the your listeners out there and everyone, you know, stay active, stay engaged, pay attention, because if we didn't have all of these activists out there, you know, reading these bills like 169 strong, and then like, of course, like your selectmen and your city councilor, if they weren't engaged, if they weren't writing letters and contacting, you know, those that are in power, you know, this would he would have signed this. It would have hit his desk. He would have signed it. So it just goes to show you that, you know, we do actually have some power in the state. It's just it's on us, the people, to be engaged and make sure we're paying attention and, you know, letting our voice be heard, because if we don't, the other side will, and then the bad things happen.
Yeah, and before we go to your latest piece here, I mean, Susan Bicewicz, the lieutenant governor, she admitted to reporters, in fact, I used one of these bites, it was today or yesterday, where she said, yeah, the governor alone got, like, I guess his office got 5,000 emails. So think for every email, Megan, how many people are mad but just didn't email and didn't do anything. So you could probably multiply that 5,000 by 5, 10, 15, or 20 to the people that were really upset by this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, if I had my way, I would have vetoed the bill. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the governor is going to ultimately decide. I know one of the options is, you know, revising the bill.
Yeah.
Without seeing it, you know, it's hard for me to, like, comment. But, I mean, I wish it wouldn't go that way. But anything's better than him signing it. Ultimately, though, if I had my way, I would like to see it vetoed and come back next year with a good plan.
A very influential Fairfield County legislator, State Rep. Jonathan Steinberg, Democrat Westport, is again saying that people are going to have to pay up here regarding the energy bill. So this is your latest piece here at the Hartford Portfolio. So what is this about?
Well, so this session, the lawmakers in both parties, and actually, it was nice to see them getting along.
Mm-hmm.
They worked together on this big energy bill, because we all know, we've all talked about it over and over again, how high our electricity prices are, second highest in the country. And they did pass a bill. It's fine. I mean, we'll get, I think they you know what, I don't like bonding when we don't have to.
Yeah.
And part of the bill is they're bonding for a few years to pay, help us pay our public benefit charge.
Oh.
On top of that, though, there is, I would say, you know, roughly another $200 million in long-term savings that isn't going to be bonded. But this is another example of how we need to really pay attention to our electric bills, and we need to pay attention to what's happening, because the environmentalists aren't that happy with removing public benefit charge from our bill. They want that on there. And not only do they want that on there, according to Jonathan Steinberg, and I give him credit because he was being honest.
Oh, he's up front. Yeah.
He was being very upfront about it. Like, we need to build out our grid. I mean, we need to be prepared for the future. And that costs money.
It does.
And that means, like, he's warning us, our bills are going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
This is not like if, it's, you know, when. They're going to go up. And they have zero interest, the environmentalists, in getting rid or giving us any relief on these public benefit charges. They want us ratepayers paying for car chargers for rich people, subsidies for rich people to buy electric cars, which that really doesn't belong on our electric bill. I understand, you know, if they're building out infrastructure, that's, you know, I like user fees. We're using it. I mean, I don't like that it's so expensive. But we're going to have to pay for it. But what we need to do is we really need to follow this through. The session's over, but the environmentalists haven't stopped. I mean, he's encouraging them to be, like, vigilant and stay focused, because he's nervous that affordability is going to crowd out, you know, all the good intentions and all the climate goals. So for the environmentalists and the progressives up in Hartford, affordability isn't the goal if it gets in the way of their environmental goals.
And these are the same people that boo Governor Lamont when he's at a public forum a couple of months ago saying, yeah, but you know what? We don't generate enough power. And we need, you know, power from Hydro-Quebec. And you would have thought that he made a mortal sin when he said, well, yeah, we could use some more natural gas, too. And the environmentalists went crazy. Megan, I don't get it. What do they think we're going to do, build campfires and sit in igloos? I don't get it.
We're going to have wind and solar, and that's going to solve all our problems.
Stop.
And I'm not hating on wind and solar. I think the technology
is
interesting.
It's part of the issue.
It's not going to solve anything. It's nice. Well, a lot of things are nice, but it's not going to, like, fix the problem. My electric bill isn't going to go down, and we're only coming into the summer. And I know, you know, they say it's coming down, but, you know, I had to turn my, you know, I'm kind of cheap, but I still had to bite the bullet and turn my air conditioning on the other night because it's, like, 78 degrees upstairs.
Move to Wallingford. I'm telling you, move to my hometown.
I know those lug people living in the lap of luxury in Wallingford.
Move to Wally World. Keep my taxes down. How's the dog? Is the dog okay from those late nights?
Oh, he had a little upset belly over the weekend.
Yeah.
So I had to sleep on the couch because I didn't want him, you know, getting sick. I had to take him out. But yeah, I think he's doing okay now.
All right, Megan Portfolio, check it out, the Hartford Portfolio blog at the Yankee Institute, yankeeinstitute.org. Megan, be good. Tell the dog I said hi, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, be good. There you go. Check it out, folks, the Hartford Portfolio, the great Megan Portfolio. You can also get the links to her latest pieces at the Capital Report, ctcapitalreport.com.